So if I didn't say so formally, I will say it now. Well, I'd like to welcome everyone tonight to our Rosh Hashanah service, our Yom Teruah service. Right now in a traditional synagogue, let's see, it's 8 o'clock. You'd just be warming up now. You'd probably go till about 10 o'clock tonight, at least. And then you do it all over again in the morning. And we will do it all over again in the morning to some extent. I'm going to warn some of you now who are here for the first time. I'm a product of my environment. So what you hear from me tonight, you'll wonder, it's like, okay, where did that come from? I'll share with you. And it's like, oh, that makes perfect sense. Tonight, I want to talk about the signs of Messiah. The title came last. It's inspired by a song which I'll share. I'm not going to sing or anything, but some of the lyrics are in here. And it's called Sign, Sign, Everywhere a Sign. Yes, we're going back in time. When it came out, I was 5. So I did not remember when it came out the first time, but I have heard it many times since. So you have heard the sound of the shofar on this evening of Yom Teruah, Rosh Hashanah, which begins at sundown. Looks like the sun is down. Over the years, I've conveyed that this would be the time when Messiah returns. Scripture conveys that his shofar will sound just prior to his return, an audible sign for everyone to hear. Even under a rock, you would still hear it. Even in the depths of the sea, you would still hear it. We see this reference first in 1 Thessalonians 4, where it says in verse 16, "For the Lord himself will come down from heaven with a rousing cry, with a call from one of the ruling angels, and with God's shofar." What you heard tonight, I can only convey is but, how I put this, I don't want to call it a remnant, but I will call it a mere example. It by no way is going to, what you heard tonight does not even come close to representing what you will hear. Because it will be heard all around the world. Every ear will hear. We hear of it again in 1 Corinthians 15. In verse 51, "Look, I will tell you a secret," Shaul says. "Not all of us will die, but we will all be changed. It will take but a moment, the blink of an eye, at the final shofar. For the shofar will sound, and the dead will be raised to live forever. And we, too, will be changed." Then we read of this shofar again in Matthew 24, starting in verse 29. "But immediately following the trouble of those times, the sun will grow dark, the moon will stop shining, the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers in heaven will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky. All the tribes of the land will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with tremendous power and glory. And in verse 31, he will send out his angels with a great shofar, and they will gather together his chosen people from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other." An audible sign. Usually we're looking for visual signs. This is audible in nature, referring to his coming that will be unmistakable. You've heard his shofar, but you've never heard God's shofar when it sounds. Yet there are signs prior to Yeshua's return that we need to be aware, or lest we be deceived or easily shaken like those of the Thessalonians. Shaul writes in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 1, "But in connection with the coming of our Lord, the Messiah, and our gathering together to meet him, we ask you, brothers, not to be easily shaken in your thinking or anxious because of a spirit or a spoken message or a letter supposedly from us claiming that the day of the Lord has already come." There's a term for that. And I apologize. It's current. Fake news. They experience fake news here. They're getting information that's basically saying, well, the Lord's already come. "Don't let anyone deceive you in any way," verse 3. "For the day will not come until after the apostasy has come, and the man who separates himself from Torah has been revealed, the one destined for doom." So in other words, the Lord's coming is not going to happen until another sign. The adversary is revealed. He will oppose himself to everything that people call a god or make an object of worship. He will put himself above them all so that he will sit in the temple of God and proclaim that he himself is God. Another sign. Yeshua conveys, then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky. This is the last of the signs that you will see before Yeshua's return. Yeshua sets the stage for what this sign is to look like. He conveys that the sun will grow dark, the moon will stop shining, the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers in heaven will be shaken. What is this but total darkness? You sort of get a glimpse of it outside. But it's not completely total. There's still stars in the sky. That is, if the clouds aren't covering them. Imagine you are in a theater about to watch a movie or a play. The house lights go down completely, and you are sitting in total darkness. Then, with no warning, a single spot of light turns on, and it illuminates the entire theater. This is what the sign of the Son of Man is. Yeshua himself provides us with just such a clue in John chapter 8 and verse 12. Yeshua spoke to them again and he said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light which gives life. So Yeshua is that light. If the sun stops shining, there's no light. If the moon grows dark, where does the moon get its light from but the sun? If the stars fall from the sky, then there is no backdrop to even see them. Total darkness, what I talked about earlier. Consider the message of the prophet Isaiah in chapter 60. Arise, shine, for your light has come. The glory of Adonai has risen over you. For although darkness covers the earth and thick darkness the peoples, on you Adonai will rise, over you will be seen his glory. Nations will go toward your light and kings toward your shining splendor. Yeshua is that light that Isaiah was talking about. He likely didn't know what he was talking about, but he wrote anyways. He was inspired by God to write these words, which we are reading tonight. When his light illuminates everything, then we see the second part of 1 Thessalonians 4 come into play. The dead in Messiah will rise first, and then we who remain. This will happen at the time when the final sign of Messiah will appear, that being his light. With this being the final sign prior to his return, there are other signs we should pay attention to so that we are not easily misled as those in Thessalonica. Revelation conveys two witnesses are to appear prior to Yeshua's return. In Revelation 11:1, I was given a measuring rod like a stick and told, get up and measure the temple of God and the altar and count how many people are worshiping there. But the count outside the temple, leave that out. Don't measure it because it has been given to the goyim, to the Gentiles, and they will trample over the holy city for 42 months. Also, I give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy for 1,260 days, dressed in sackcloth. These are the two olive trees, and the two menorahs standing before the Lord of the earth. We know who one of the witnesses is already. It is none other than Eliyahu, the one we opened the door for on Passover, invite into our homes. But didn't he already come through Yochanan the Immerser? Matthew 11:12, from the time Yochanan the Immerser until now, the kingdom of heaven has been suffering violence. Yes, violent ones are trying to snatch it away. For all the prophets in the Torah prophesied until Yochanan. Indeed, if you are willing to accept it, he is Eliyahu, whose coming was predicted. Yeshua's own words conveying that Yochanan was Eliyahu. However, these are also Yeshua's own words. When asked after the transfiguration about Eliyahu who appeared along with Moses? His Talmidim asked, then why do the Torah teachers say that Eliyahu must come first? What is the basis of their question? The Torah teachers convey that Eliyahu must come first based on Malachi. Chapter 3, verses 23 and 24. Look, I will send to you Eliyahu the prophet before the coming of the great and terrible day of Adonai. He will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to their fathers. Otherwise, I will come and strike the land with complete destruction. The Torah teachers are correct here in their teaching. And Yeshua actually affirms their teaching by conveying to them in his answer. In Matthew chapter 17 and verse 11, he answers, on the one hand, Eliyahu is coming and will restore all things. On the other hand, I tell you that Eliyahu has come already, and people did not recognize him, but did whatever they pleased to him. In the same way, the Son of Man, too, is about to suffer at their hands. So Yeshua himself is, in essence, conveying that Elijah is going to appear twice. He's appeared already once in the spirit of John the Baptist, Yochanan the Immerser. But he will actually appear again. In other words, Eliyahu will come in the flesh to usher Yeshua's return. If you recall, Eliyahu did not die. Remember this verse, Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27. Just as human beings have to die once, but after this comes judgment. Eliyahu did not die, therefore he still remains alive somewhere. Scripture records this for us in 2 Kings chapter 2 and verse 11. Suddenly, as they were walking on and talking, there appeared a fiery chariot with horses of fire, and as it separated the two of them from each other, Eliyahu went up into heaven in a whirlwind. Apparently the ride was for him. So we read of these two witnesses, one of them being Eliyahu, that they were given a measuring rod to measure the temple, that they would be given power, and that they would prophesy for 1260 days. For those of you, you know me, I am a man of numbers. 1260 days, according to a 360-day lunar calendar, is 42 months, which is 3.5 years, which is what is listed during the time of their preaching, of their prophesying. I promise to share with you what's going on now and how it relates to Messiah. So what about the recent Abraham Accord, establishing normalized relations between Israel and the Arab nations of Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates? How does this treaty, this covenant, along with that of Egypt, signed in 1979, and Jordan, signed in 1994, factor into the return of Messiah? Is this also a sign we should be paying attention to? At first, when the Trump administration revealed their peace plan for the Middle East, I was encouraged but also apprehensive. I was reminded of Daniel 9:27. He will make a strong covenant with leaders for 1 week. For half of the week, he will put a stop to the sacrifices and the grain offering. On the wing of detestable things, the desolate will come and continue until the already decreed destruction is poured out on the desolator. I was encouraged yet apprehensive. Are we, America, going to enter into a peace treaty with Israel and the Arab nations? Would this make President Trump the Antichrist? For whatever you may think of him, for some already consider him to be that, there is a distinction that needs to be made. The Hebrew word for strong is gabar. And it ultimately conveys that which will be strong and mighty. It will be greater than any previous covenant. I believe what we are seeing here today with the two most recent covenants of the UAE and Bahrain, along with the two previous covenants of Egypt and Jordan, is a foundation being established. Just as treaties established under the now disbanded League of Nations are still recognized under the now current United Nations, so too the covenant that will be established between Israel and the Arab world through the anti-Messiah will recognize the previous covenants that are made. They will be building blocks. These are the covenants that will not need to be renegotiated again, in that they are already established and will become part of the covenant of Daniel 9:27. So the United States is not entering into any covenant or treaty with the Arab nations and with Israel, but is merely brokering these agreements. Our president signed as a witness, not as a participant, of these covenants to normalize relations and thus establish peace between these nations. This was also the case in 1978 and 1994. More of these covenants will be entered into in the coming days. Don't be surprised if you hear the news that President Trump alluded to, as many as five additional Middle Eastern nations entering into a similar covenant with Israel. Some are downplaying it. Well, you can't have a peace treaty unless there's war. That's incorrect. You can establish a peace covenant to prevent war. What you are seeing is a sign that will lead to the ultimate of covenants. It will be at this time that the one who makes this covenant will be revealed. That is, he will be made known. We see in Daniel's prophecy that desolation will come through the one who will stop the sacrifices in the temple. This is something Yeshua has also alluded to in Matthew 24:15. So when you see the abomination that causes desolation spoken about through the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, and then at the end in brackets says, let the reader understand the allusion. He's not talking about the past, but something in the future. This is not a statement where Yeshua is instructing his Talmidim to look back in time to Antiochus Epiphanes, but rather to look forward. When bringing Shaul's warning to the Thessalonians in chapter 2, that the one who separates himself from Torah, and Yeshua establishes a connection to Daniel 9:27, that there is another sign that can be established in these verses, and that is the temple, a standing temple. Torah permits sacrifice in only one place. Deuteronomy chapter 12, starting in verse 5. Rather, you are to come to the place where Adonai your God will put his name. He will choose it from all your tribes, and you will seek out that place, which is where he will live, and go there. You will bring there your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tenths, your offerings, that you give, the offerings you have vowed, your voluntary offerings, and the firstborn of your cattle and sheep. There you will eat in the presence of Adonai your God, and you will rejoice over everything you set out to do, you and your households, in which Adonai your God has blessed you. So there's only one place, a place where God would establish his name. And evidence is important. The chain of custody is important. And thus, with the establishment of the temple built by Solomon, where Adonai would reside, because in the last verse of chapter 12 of verse 7, there you will eat in the presence of Adonai your God. 2 Chronicles chapter 7 verse 1, when Solomon had finished praying, fire came down from heaven, consumed the burnt offerings and the sacrifices, and the glory of Adonai filled the house, so that the Kohanim could not enter the house of Adonai because the glory of Adonai filled it. All the people of Israel saw when the fire came down and the glory of Adonai was on the house. They bowed down with their faces to the ground on the flooring, prostrating themselves. They gave thanks to Adonai, for he is good, for his grace continues forever. That was last week's sermon, by the way. thus establishing through his presence the place where he would reside. It will be in Jerusalem that a temple will be rebuilt. As to whether it will be in the right location within the boundaries, but it will be in the within the boundaries of Jerusalem is a whole other story. There must be a temple in Jerusalem for the prophecy of Daniel 9:27 and Yeshua's reference in Matthew 24:15 to come to fruition. So in order for them to be stopped, that is the sacrifices, they must have resumed in the future. For that to happen, there must be a temple. This is yet another sign to pay attention to regarding Yeshua's return. I've seen signs in front of churches saying Jesus is coming and Jesus is coming soon. Yet the signs we are to pay attention to are either being ignored or not understood. I can't say they are hidden because they are right there in front of you. They have been revealed to you. So I want to go back to the two witnesses for a moment in Revelation 11. I'd reference the time frame by which they would be active in Jerusalem, that they will be in the temple prophesying 1260 days, that is 42 months, which is 3.5 years. So let me ask you a question. With Elijah being there 42 months, Daniel talks about 7 years. 7 years is 7 years is 84 months. 84 divided by 2 is 42. So we're talking half. Is it the first half or is it the second half? They will be there 3.5 years. The math conveys this. Is the half of 7 years of Daniel's prophecy regarding the 70th week. Can we determine if it is the first half or the second half? I wouldn't be asking this question if I didn't think we could. We read further in Revelation 11, verses 7 and 8. When they finish their witnessing, the beast coming up out of the abyss will fight against them, overcome them, and kill them. And their dead bodies will lie in the main street of the great city, whose name, to reflect its spiritual condition, is Sodom and Egypt. Yet they are in Jerusalem. They are at the temple. But this is the condition of the city as it stands. So let me ask you, the one coming out of the abyss to kill them, is that not an act of aggression? Would that not be considered a violation of a peace treaty? It says in Daniel 9:27 that the covenant would be broken halfway through the 70th year. It also said in Revelation that they could not be killed until their time was done. They were given 42 months. So to this act of aggression, recall your history class. When you were taught about World War I, I'm hoping you were all taught about World War I. We as a nation did not enter it till 1917, but it started in 1914. And it was started by an act of aggression, the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand of Austria. So too, this act of aggression by the adversary will be the catalyst whereby he breaks the strong covenant with Israel that will in fact lead to Yeshua's return. Not right away, but it will be a sign to pay attention to. This morning, as I was compiling this message, the lyrics composed by Lee Emerson of the Canadian rock group Five Man Electrical Band, who sang in 1971, sign, sign, everywhere a sign. Blocking out the scenery, breaking my mind. Do this, do that. Can't you see or read the sign? Speaking of literal signs and physical signs, considering some of the lyrics, long-haired, freaky people not need not apply. That was one of the signs that would be on the window for people looking to hire. Literal signs, physical signs, large billboards seen by the road on buildings, etc. But here we're talking about a prophetic sign and signs plural that are everywhere. I've listed several of them to you tonight already. I want to share with you the last stanza from the song. And the sign said, everybody welcome, come in, kneel down and pray. But when they passed around the plate, at the end of it all, I didn't have a penny to pay. So I got me a pen and a paper, and I made up my own little sign. I said, thank you, Lord, for thinking about me. I'm alive and doing fine. He thought about you when Yeshua revealed the signs of his return to us. Remember this verse, Deuteronomy chapter 29, verse 28. Things which are hidden belong to Adonai, our God, but the things that have been revealed belong to us and our children forever, so that we can observe all the words of the Torah. These things have been made known to us. They are not hidden. So why is there little understanding pertaining to signs of Messiah's return and the vast amounts of misinformation being disseminated? There are many signs that have been made known to us, some for now, others that will occur in the future. The point being, there is no reason why anyone should be deceived if they follow Yeshua. He has made it clear while we have complicated it. Here is Yeshua's warning. Watch out. Don't let anyone fool you. For many will come in my name saying, I am the Messiah, and they will lead many astray. My understanding of verse 5 in Matthew 24 is that many in the body will profess Yeshua as Messiah while also leading many astray. In other words, wolves in sheep's clothing. This is an inward warning. Then Yeshua follows with an outward warning as to the times. You will hear the noise of wars nearby and the news of wars far off. See to it you don't become frightened. Such things must happen, but the end isn't yet not come. For peoples will fight each other, nations will fight each other, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various parts of the world. All this is but the beginning of the birth pains. At that time, you will be arrested and handed over to be punished and put to death, and all peoples will hate you because of me. At that time, many will be trapped into betraying and hating each other. This is the outward-looking message. This is the outward-looking message of the world in relation to believers. Then Yeshua goes inward again. Many false prophets will appear and fool many people. And many people's love will grow cold because of increased distance from Torah. I don't know how many weeks I've shared this one verse with you, but you're going to get it another week. But whoever holds out till the end will be delivered. Those who endure to the end will be saved. Psalm 68. Let God arise. Let his enemies be scattered. Let those who hate him flee from his presence. Drive them away as smoke is driven away, like wax melting in the presence of a fire. Let the wicked perish in the presence of God. But let the righteous rejoice and be glad in God's presence. Yes, let them exalt and rejoice. Sing to God, sing praises to his name. Extol him who rides on the clouds by the name Yah, and be glad in his presence. Here you have your marching orders for tonight. I think we've done some of that. So we will continue this celebration in the morning. So if everybody will please rise.